5 o'clock. So should we call to order here, or
we can.
All right. Well. Okay. Well, let's call to order the study session. Michael, are you got something to say till we get our guest of honor in place?
I do. Yeah, and I imagine that's him coming on now. So, Council, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem, hello, Dean.
Hello.
I asked Dean Fearing of the Colchin Community Land Trust to come and present to you on his organization and the affordable housing model that they use, or models that they use. Specifically, they're working on the middle, the missing middle issue, which is those folks who are tend to fall below market rate affordability housing and earn too much income for most affordable housing or any kind of assistance programs. The reason for this is, of course, because housing has been a priority for us. We've been talking about potential housing affordability programs on and off for a while. So this has been in the works. It's timely, given that we just came out of the retreat. Housing was confirmed to be a top priority, but this was in the works long before the retreat. You did get a link to a presentation in your package. That's my presentation, which I'll give after Dean talks. So give you an opportunity here for Dean to tell you about Colchin Community Land Trust and their programs. And then I'll come back around with some stuff more specific to us. Dean, can you hear us there?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Hi, Dean.
Hey, good to see you.
I don't know if you and Sam ever got it coordinated with the presentation, but if you want to just go get started, I think that Dean has probably about maybe 10 minutes at the most, so perhaps waiting for questions towards the end or whatever he thinks works best.
Great, thank you. Can you see the presentation that I'm trying to put up?
Yep.
Oh, good. Okay.
If you could zoom in or occupy the whole screen with that, we can see a whole bunch of stuff that isn't the presentation, but okay. It's good enough. If you can't, don't worry about it.
If you just do slideshow from the beginning, that normal way you would present on it, otherwise it'll do that for us.
Okay. Did it just work? Oh, from the beginning. Got it. Thank you. Maybe. Oh, look at that.
Better.
Okay, I can't see my notes, but I think I've done this work long enough that I can discuss it. Thanks again for letting me come and talk to you tonight about Colchin Community Land Trust and a little bit about the work that we do here in Whatcom County. Anytime during this presentation, if you have questions, please stop and ask. I think that's the best way to kind of work through this, is to make it, just ask those questions as they come up. So Colchin Community Land Trust started back in 1999. At that time, as with now, home prices were rising at a rate much faster than what area wages were. And so some folks got together and looked at some models in around the nation that preserved housing for workforce families here in our community. As you're all aware, I don't have to spend too much time talking about the problems that our communities face, so I won't do that. But as you know, many families in our community can no longer buy a home and put down roots in the place that they want to live and raise their families. Home prices simply are just too high now to do that. Part of the reason is we have steady population growth here in Whatcom County. We've obviously been discovered. A lot of people like us want to live here and raise their families here. And that's putting a lot of pressure on the local housing market. In Bellingham, I know the average home price is now well above $650,000. I know from talking to Michael that the city of Blaine is seeing bidding wars and home prices rise at a very rapid rate as well. And what that means is roughly only a third of working families here in Whatcom County now can afford to buy a home. And so of the few homes that are for sale, most people with good jobs here in our community are priced out of homeownership. So Koshin Community Land Trust, the sole reason that we exist, or one of the primary reasons that we exist, is as a model to help with the local housing crisis. There's different names for community land trust. Something we use a lot is called shared equity. And the reason why we call it shared equity is that when a family buys a home through Koshin Community Land Trust, we are taking title to the land and we steward that for the community. The homeowner is taking title to the home or the improvements. Koshin Community Land Trust buyers get mortgages just like every other buyer, but again, they're buying the improvement. And the key piece to that is that we are preserving the affordability of that home for future generations. So when that family decides to sell their home, it's going to be affordable to a family earning 120% or less of their median income. And that really is the key piece of what a community land trust does, is that we're preserving the affordability for future generations so that people with good jobs in our community can afford to live here. And as I'll talk about in a minute, we're really looking for ways to scale up our program so that we can help a lot more families, because we think this model is a great way to take homes out of the speculative market. And so family buying homes through our program understand that they're not going to get wealthy through owning a home as if you were buying a home on the open market. But that doesn't mean that you can't build equity and that you can't, and you know, for many of our families, they're building some wealth for the very first time. It's just not the wealth we see on the speculative market. And so I think Michael has done a good job talking about this. We call this workforce housing. And again, it's the housing, first-time home buyers, people who have good jobs in our community, who have just simply been priced out of that opportunity of buying a home where they live and work. Another term that we use is missing middle when we talk about workforce housing. And so as you'll see from this chart, what Koshin Community Land Trust aims to do is we help buyers from 50% of area median income up to 120% of area median income. Traditionally, we've always helped families earning between 50 and 80% of area median income. And to do that, we access down payment assistance through the state of Washington. There's some HUD agencies that we access financing from. And that's roughly between $50,000 and $100,000 that we bring in for a down payment. But recognizing that families earning above 81% of area median income can no longer afford to buy a home here, we have shifted our programming to grow our capacity, but to help people earning above that 81% range all the way up to 120%. And so we're doing that by purchasing land throughout the county. We currently have about 90 homes in our pipeline in the city of Bellingham. We have 65 homes that we're building on Telegraph Road in partnership with Habitat for Humanity and the Whatcom Community Foundation. And those will be done over the next 6 to 8 years. There's 23 currently under construction. The balance of them will be done in 6 to 8 years. We have a 9-home project that we're building in the Birchwood neighborhood of Bellingham. I'm working to purchase 10 acres of developable land in the city of Ferndale. That will be another 80 homes. And then I'm hoping to work with the city of Blaine to access some land there as well to put in our pipeline to be able to build. And so all of this fits into scaling up our programming. Like I said, we currently have 140 homes in the trust, but to really have an impact in our community, we need to be building 25 to 50 homes a year and get to that place where we have 2,000 to 5,000 homes in our community so that we know that plumbers, elementary teachers can put down roots in our community and you know, be able to raise their families here and not worry about spending too much of their income on their housing related expenses. So that's an area that we're really working to focus on. Again, we're striving to grow our capacity in these next few years so that we can meet those demands. A key piece of that, like I said, is putting land in our pipeline, working with some of the small cities, working with the county executive on ways that we can access more land to build on to meet that need. The other key piece of that, of course, is finding builders that will work with us, because we know we can build the homes at the price point that somebody at 90% or 100% of AMI can afford, homes that are currently not on the market. And so we're really working to establish those relationships with some builders like Dawson Construction or RAM, and some of the other larger builders in our community.
For a point of context, Council, the majority of our employees fall in that 80 to 120% missing middle range that Dean just, that's back on the screen there. So again, that's just, I think, worth pointing out that the majority of the city's employees, decent paying jobs with benefits, they land, many of our employees land in that space.
Thank you for mentioning that. I have a lot of the larger employers reaching out to us now too, who are looking for some solutions to the housing crisis, because what they're seeing is they can't grow or expand their businesses the way that they would like to. I recently met with Western Washington University, and for a while now, it's been a problem for them to attract and retain employees who keep the university running. But it's now at the point that they're having difficulty attracting some of their higher paid jobs, like their tenured faculty and some of the other positions. And so it's starting really to ripple down through our economy in a lot of different ways. And I think if we can really scale up and utilize this model, it's a great way to preserve the affordability. And that's the piece that gets me excited. I had help buying my first home here in Whatcom County because I happened to be in the Navy and had a VA mortgage. And what I hear from people over and over again is if they don't have help getting into home ownership, it's just simply unattainable. Again, that's very brief. I'd love to meet with anyone one-on-one if you'd like to see some of the projects that we're currently building. I'm happy to talk more in depth about this. I think that was a pretty quick rundown of what we do. If you have any questions, please let me know.
Don't all jump in at once, people.
I think it would be interesting to see some examples of some of the communities that have been developed using this program. I also have some questions about understanding that the community owns the land. To me, it feels kind of like a concept that's similar to an RV park. And I don't think that's what we're talking about here, but is there an investment that is paid back into paying for the land, similar to like an RV park? How does that get financed?
So on paper, it's the down payment assistance that we bring in that finances the purchase of the land. And Colshan's job as an organization is to steward those homes so that they stay affordable. And so that's the shared equity piece that I was talking about early on. The community owns the land, and it stays in the community forever. Colshan cannot leverage that in any way. And I'll use a home that we have coming up for sale as an example. It came into the trust about 17 years ago. It is going to sell to the next buyer for $137,000. It's a home that would easily sell for probably $550,000 based on homes in the neighborhood. It's right in the York neighborhood. That equity that is in that home, the difference between 137 and 550,000 stays in that home forever. It cannot be touched. Our bylaws strictly forbid us from leveraging that in any way. And so that equity is shared with the community. That equity doesn't go to the owner. It doesn't go to Colshan Community Land Trust. It's really there so that there are affordable homes that working people in our community can afford.
So question, when they buy one of these homes, can they ever buy the land also, or is that always stay in that Colshan Land Trust?
it always stays in the land trust. And so the other great thing about a community land trust is we have a tripartite board. Our board is made up of members, people from the community, and homeowners. And that board is strictly bound by bylaws, which stipulate that that land cannot be sold. The only way it can be sold, and it's happened one time with Coastal Community Land Trust, is if that homeowner, in this case, the homeowner was having difficulty selling the land. And so it was a vote brought to the members, and the members had to approve selling that land. And in that case, the homeowner was selling the home and the land. It wasn't that they wanted to buy the land. But in that case, we recaptured the down payment assistance and put it into another home.
So when they go to resell the home, how do they, is it marketed the same way? And they put a price on the improvements and a price on the land is what they do? Is it appraised?
That's a great question. And I'm glad you answered that, because that's another key piece of the work that we do. So when we take title to the land, we have a ground lease in place. And so our homeowners lease the land from Coalition Community Land Trust. There's a $45 a month ground lease fee that they pay to Coalition Community Land Trust. That ground lease stipulates what happens at the time of resale. So our homeowners are earning 1.5% equity per year. We've had about 94 families sell their homes. They've decided, most of those families have decided they wanted a home in the community that wasn't resale restricted or shared equity. And so most of those families take roughly $30,000 to $50,000 in equity that they've built up over 7 years. And I'm using averages here, but roughly $30,000 to $50,000 in equity, and then they buy another home in the community.
Okay, thank you.
Ryan, you had a question?
Yeah, couple questions. The current wait list, what is that looking like right now?
We have about 50 to 60 families on our wait list. And so when a family decides to sell their home, it goes to our wait list first. And usually there's somebody on that wait list that wants to buy that home, especially if it's at a low price, like $137,000. We don't have any problem finding somebody from the wait list. About in 2008, 2009, when the market had shifted so much, there were some homes that were for sale that took a little while longer to sell. And in those cases, the sellers were hiring real estate agents to market the homes. And again, on that side of the transaction, it looks like any other transaction. The borrowers have to get pre-approved with the bank, and we have about five lenders we work with. Our loans are underwritten, so that's usually not a problem. So on that side, it looks very conventional, with the exception of the buyer just buying the improvements and not the land.
And then timeline-wise, are they looking at 1 year, 1 year, 2 years?
To
like, get a home? I know it'll depend. Like if you have, for example, a single mother and two children compared to a family of six, if a house that comes up
for
that family of six, obviously they're going to leapfrog and get into there. But I was just asking kind of timeline. So let's say I applied for this today, just hypothetical. Am I on that wait list for a year, 2 years, 5 years?
We generally tell people 2 years.
2 years.
But it's so hard to predict, but that's why we try to tell people at least 2 years. Now that we're building 23 homes at Telegraph Road, people are coming through our wait list more frequently. Last year we finished 8 homes at Telegraph Road. This year there'll be 4 homes that will finish there. We have a home that we have a surplus lot the city of Bellingham gave us, and we'll be building a home on that. So, but what we do is it's based on seniority. So if somebody applies for our program, we date stamp their application and then they get in line. But as you mentioned, we put families in the appropriate size home. So we wouldn't let a single person buy a 3-bedroom home. Ideally, it's a family of 4 or 5.
Okay. And then I have 2 more questions, if that's okay.
Yep.
Okay. When it comes to City of Blaine, City of Ferndale, City of Bellingham, what's the most common way that the cities help contribute? Is it gifting land? Is it waiving hookup fees? Is there some other mechanism that they typically follow?
Yeah. In the City of Bellingham, where most of our homes are, they access HUD funding, and then we have a voter approved initiative too that provides some funding. And so that's $40,000 per home that the city of Bellingham brings in. They also have a reduction, an 80% reduction in permits and fees if the home is going to be affordable to somebody below 80% of area median income. In addition to that, there's some Whatcom County EDI funding that we can use to help offset the cost of permits and fees. And that's roughly $20,000 to $21,000 that we can access. And so all of those things have a huge impact when we're building homes for people under 80% of area median income. When we're doing homes for people above 81% up to 120%, we can't access that funding. And that's where it's important to know that we can build homes at that price point that those families can afford.
Okay. And then my last question just has to do with the value of the homes compared to, I guess, their neighbors. So I know they're within Blaine, there's a few homes that are under CLT. Does it negatively impact the neighbor's home because your neighbor is under CLT, or does it not matter at all?
It doesn't matter. Our appraisals are, they're based on comps, area comps.
Okay.
And so they're not based on the resale restricted price.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
That said, you know, there's been times when we've had appraisers who knew what the contract price for the home was. And so they set the value safely at a lower level. And we said, okay, you're not using the area comps, and then they'll adjust it. And from that point, you know, we want all of our home buyers to pay fair taxes. And so the taxes are set on resale restricted prices. And then the comps that are made when the appraisers come are based on the area prices as well.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, well, was that the whole presentation we had booked here, Michael? Is Michael still with the meeting? Oh, you're muted there, Michael.
And I said some really important things. my response was that that's it for Dean. He'll probably stay online in case you have any questions for him, but I wanted to present to you on a couple of properties where something like this, this or something like this could be utilized, and just get a little bit of feedback from council, essentially to see how much time and energy to invest on further exploring this. So let me get that presentation and I'll share my screen.
A theory isn't an overarching theory that the more affordable housing we have around here, the more likely we are to have great businesses come and want to site in Blaine because their employees will be able to live somewhere?
That, yes, I would say that's generally the case. The number one reason that businesses are having a hard time expanding or locating in Whatcom County, according to the county's Economic Development Advisory Committee, which is made up of business representatives across a wide range of business sectors. I happen to serve on that committee as a small city's rep, so I have firsthand knowledge. They've reported to Whatcom County Council, and they've repeatedly spoken out about the number one issue that they experience as business owners in Whatcom County for having challenges with expansion and job creation is that they can't find employees to fill jobs, or employees need a salary too high for them to continue to provide the products and services that they provide in a way that is marketable and cost effective. So yeah, presumably having more homes that somebody who makes $60,000, $70,000 a year can afford to live in would mean we could have more cheesecake made, we could have more granola made, we could attract other businesses to the community. Which all provide money into the economy for everyone's benefit, or at least in, if you follow the rising tide philosophy, it's beneficial kind of across the board. So yeah, bring my slideshow up from the, so you can see that. Everyone, I assume, can see that?
We're looking at the, that looks like the agenda.
Oh. Let me try that again. You, yeah. That should work.
There you go.
Okay, so this is, again, just to give you some general information on a couple of properties that could conceptually work for affordable housing in the city that the city owns. There's lots of other property that the city doesn't own, of course, but it's not ours to decide how it's used. There we go. We have a site at the old City Hall property, of course, and we have a property at the North Harvey Road water tower. The old City Hall property will be tearing down City Hall this year, and we need to reserve about a third of that property for the police department annex. There's about two thirds of that property that we don't have a current use for. So council had said not to seek to market that at this time, and we might want to preserve it for another use. This could conceivably be another use. And then the North Harvey Road property, I'll show you how that is also excessive for our needs. The affordable housing, of course, it provides something that's below market rate and creates some of those economic development opportunities. And these are some of the city's goals, are to promote housing and economic development. The interesting thing about a downtown development with housing in it would be that it could also work to be somewhat of a stimulus project, because just seeing development occurring in the downtown tends to make development in downtown look attractive and look possible. So we've kind of seen someone's come to us after seeing other projects go up wanting to talk about new projects. So it wouldn't be hard to kind of give downtown a shot in the arm, so to speak, by building a project in downtown.
Is the old City Hall property isn't that block zoned in such a way where it would have to be commercial on the ground floor, but we could put residential above it, and that could be affordable housing?
That's correct. Yes, that would have to be a mixed use building with the current zoning requirements. So donation of a city property is permissible for affordable housing. It's not a gifting of public funds issue. There's specific legislation that addresses that, and we would need to make sure that we fall within that allowance. I mentioned there are the two potential sites. The first one is here, North Harvey Road. So now to orient you, you can almost see H Street at the bottom of this screen, but not quite. This is just to the east of the East Maple Ridge development site. East Maple Ridge is this land here, if you can see my cursor, and the road for Harbor Hills Parkway would cross North Harvey right there. The border is just off the screen to the north. This is the city's water tower here, that white circle. And we have lots of room there for additional facilities, a second reservoir tower if needed, pumping facilities. There's quite a bit of land here after consulting with Public Works, with Mr. Zemanek and others, that's very adequate for our needs, which leaves us about 2¾ acres or so, maybe 3 acres of land that would ultimately end up on the other side of Harbor Hills Parkway. That could be a development site. That would probably support mixed housing types. So maybe townhouses, maybe single family homes, maybe cottages, something along those lines. One of the really attractive things about this is this would be eligible, most likely an affordable housing project or a workforce housing project there would most likely be eligible for EDI funding under the new EDI program that I worked with Watkin County to develop, that would allow for an EDI grant loan combination to install infrastructure to support the housing. So in this case, the infrastructure would be Harbor Hills Parkway, the multimodal trail adjacent to it, and the necessary water, sewer, and electric facilities. Now we have water lines right there, of course, because of the water tower. Sewer goes just to our property line at the far western edge of this. We have electricity in the area, but it's not adequate to support the future development. So we would definitely have a need to develop the road corridor and utility corridor through this site. A kind of trickle-down advantage of this is by funding that through a program like this, it then means the next property owner to the east, which would be, this is commonly known as the Martin property, formerly owned by the Martins, that property would, when they develop, they won't need to build the piece that goes across our property if it were already built or simultaneously built from a project coming through this route. So it has the potential to make, to reduce some of the cost of developing going out towards Grandis Pond. So that's one potential site. We really don't have another use for this property short of open space or potentially making it a park. I wouldn't really advocate for us to have a park there because we're going to have a park right across the other side of North Harvey Road in East Maple Ridge. So that would be quite redundant. We do have to be careful how many parks we build because we have to own and maintain all of them. So we want to be conscientious of that. So that's one potential site. The other
Michael, before you continue on, you mentioned Harbor Hills Parkway. Could you tell me the difference between Harbor Hills Parkway and Mott's Hill Parkway?
Harbor Hills Parkway is the now named Mott's Hill Parkway.
I had to figure that that's what you meant, but I must have missed the memo because there was never a moment where I heard that explained to me. When did that happen?
It was named when you approved the first phase final plat of East Maple Ridge.
Oh, okay. That's the name that was in that. Okay. Thank you.
Right. So it was the first time that street came into existence on a piece of paper was at that time, and it got that name.
Okay.
We will try really hard to call it Harbor Hills Parkway in the future. And at some point, we'll probably even start calling East Maple Ridge Harbor Hills Estates, because that's also what that plat is being named when it goes through its final platting stages. But it's a slow transition.
All right. Thank you.
So anyway, yeah, thank you for asking that. That's a good clarification.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Hey, yeah. I had to restart. Because yes, everybody was coming over like max headroom. So I restarted. I don't think I missed anything. I had a question about that parcel by the water tower. That's him. Thank you. Thank you, Richard. What's the zoning there?
Planned residential.
To what density?
I don't know. Stacy Clausen is online. She might know. It's a required minimum density of 4 dwelling units per acre.
Four per acre, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. So
max, I don't know.
8, 9, 10. That's potentially 10 houses.
It should be about 10 or 12 houses, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I had an employee a number of years ago who was a beneficiary of the Colson Land Trust program. And they bought a house, the house, not the land. I always thought it was weird. It was like years and years ago. So that was very strange. But it afforded him the opportunity and his wife to be in a stick-built house, you know, with their dog. And, you know, it was a pretty good program for him. So I'm familiar with it. And if we could sort of, and you know, I've talked about this, something like that, in order to offer to developers it's a heck of a carrot, you know, and like you said, townhouses, we've been talking multifamily residential is I think more of our need at the moment, but as it were, anything would do at this point, beggars and choosers.
Michael, could duplexes go into that and we could be looking at like 15, 16 residences in that amount of space if we did that or no?
So I'll give you some real basic answers about the zoning. And then I would say what we should do is report back to council with more specifics. It is zoned planned residential, which allows a variety of housing types because it needs to be developed through the planned unit development process. So as a PUD, it could potentially be duplexes, but they would, but in this instance, they probably would be common wall, shared wall housing, right? A duplex means one person owns both sides. That's not the model I think that the land trust would typically work with, but it could be paired houses, it could be townhouses, it could be single family homes, it could even be a bigger multifamily building, but I don't, my personal thought is that that's not the most appropriate housing type for that site, particularly given it's fairly rural out there now. So something that emulates more typical single family development or townhouse development would probably be a better fit. In the future, Harbor Hills Parkway is going to be a primary corridor in the city of Blaine. It's not going to be out in the woods. It's going to be a main road. So that's good context. Before I move to the next site, does anyone have any other questions about this property?
Karina, you had some?
Yeah, Michael, I had a question concerning the adjacent parcels. What typically are you looking at in terms of the size of those adjacent parcels? Are they typically 5 acres or 10 acres? What are the neighbors looking at when you're looking at fairly dense population moving into your community? What are the neighbors looking at?
So it's varied, as you can see from the illustration here. The white lines are property lines, or at least approximate locations of property lines. They're not dead on exact, but they're close enough for this purpose. This green site that I have enclosed here, that's our property. It is between 5 and 6 acres, as I recall. So what that would mean is this one just to the south of it is probably about 5 acres. This one that's in this little cutout is probably about 3/4 of an acre. This one across the street is probably about an acre, acre and a half. East Maple Ridge right here is part of a large property, 98 acres, and that's going to be developed with homes on 8,000, 6,000 square foot lots. So for pretty typical urban, suburban kind of density. And the Martin property over here, similarly, would be expected to build out in the 4 to 6 dwelling units per acre kind of range. So some of these parcels are larger, like 5 or 10 acres, and some of them are 1 or 2, or perhaps a sort of a shy acre, half an acre, 3/4 of an acre size. So it's variable out here. Of course,
it's all zoned to be able to have the higher density, like the 4 to an acre, right?
Right.
Is any of it platted? Is any of those?
No, nothing else is platted except for East Maple Ridge, right across the street over here on this side of the edge.
Michael?
So is it possible if you're looking at putting in higher density, knowing that, you know, a lot of these folks with multi-acre properties, when they bought their properties, were anticipating moving out, you know, to a more country environment, may not have anticipated having a high density neighborhood moving in next door. Is the city going to take into some consideration maybe building in some sort of buffer or space between their acreage or their parcel and what's moving in next door, so that there's a little bit of privacy or something? I mean, is that something the city will factor in as it's being developed out?
Well, the answer to that is sort of easy and also sort of complicated. The city has established zoning. The city council has established zoning out there that requires certain components of development be included. So for example, a PUD has a buffer around the edge of about a 10 or 20 foot landscape buffer. I'm not the right person to ask the specifics details on that. So it's not on the tip of my tongue. But whether this particular site, if the city chose to have it become available for development, I mean, the city could theoretically require an easement of some kind that created a bigger landscape buffer, which would reduce its development potential and reduce the number of homes that are developed on it. So it has impacts. I would say people who purchased property in this portion of the city of Blaine purchased property in the city of Blaine, not in rural Whatcom County, and purchased property in an area that is zoned to build that build out at 4 to 6 dwelling units per acre. So it's the zoning that applies in that area has been there for quite a long time, for decades. And it's, we would expect development patterns consistent with that over time.
Okay, Mike Hill had a question.
Yes. hey, Mike, can we, you know, you hear affordable housing, I don't even like the word. I love that it's affordable. It's like saying modular homes. It kind of, some people look at that the wrong way. I'm not trying to switch the names or nothing, but what I think a lot of these, I've seen a lot in a lot of perception of these things sometimes are, you'll get, let's say we get 10 homes, 10 families living there, right? We got 10 families. We got one that's just a problem. I mean, like he's junky cars laying in the road and this and that. If we can make that a community, if we can just really focus on not managing their property or micromanaging them, but if something like that happens, that's what messes up our town. You know, you got it all nice, clean for all these people, then, you know, they got to keep their lawns mowed. We got to put, but we got to build it to where it's simple to maintain, you know, but looks really nice. I mean, put in, if you can, a small clubhouse or something for them, you know, something that, I don't know, something little extra that they don't have, but we want them, you know, encourage them. And the encouragement, yeah, they get a home, this and that. But if it's planned right, I really believe that'll help the whole town, our town to, we just keep working in areas like that where we can manage how well the place is maintained, you know?
Can we have CCs and RRs there, Michael, or you know, the other kinds, those other kinds of neighborhood codes?
So I would say you're going too far on your expectation of details and information. Okay. There is no proposed development. This is a hypothetical of potentially making a city-owned property available to be built out under the existing zoning with the existing code enforcement requirements to address what Mr. Hill was just saying and such as that. And, you know, to your point, Mr. May, yes, there probably would be CC&Rs.
That's all I wanted you to acknowledge.
But that's not, you know, we don't know what they would say, and we don't know what the housing type would be. This is all just a hypothetical of, would the city want to pursue something like this and learn more about it? So, yeah, can't answer questions about what the development would look like.
Although, okay, looking at how the time's coming along here, let's look at the other property you wanted to show us.
That's probably a good idea. And one of the things I would say is if Dean wants to send me some information on locations of some of the Colchin Community Land Trust projects in Whatcom County, maybe you could drive and take a look at them. I only know about one or two of them, and they look quite nice. I wouldn't be concerned about being neighbors there.
I'd like to see a list.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get some of that information. The other property, much smaller, very different environment, and it would be a different kind of, probably a different owner or tenant if it were rentals. It would probably be a certainly a different kind of housing type because it would be apartments or condos. This one does not have the infrastructure needs as the other. So the EDI grant loan, if that were done, it would be very modest because it has water, sewer, and electric and things like that are already improved. There's a street in front of it. I don't know that we would even pursue an EDI loan combo project here. And this would, Mr. May, it was you who asked about it, this would be a mixed-use development. Our zoning requires commercial on the ground floor, or at least some kind of non-residential use. So it could be offices, it could be something else. Maybe we work with someone who wants to build a community facility of some kind, like a teen center, or some kind of a recreation facility or something like that. It could be different. I'm not suggesting we, the city, want to own that, but maybe someone wants to operate that as part of the overall package. Buildings here can be 48 feet tall, if I'm not mistaken. And so that would allow for three stories at least. Well, that would allow for three stories max, not at least. And it could support something in the vicinity probably of 10 or 12 units. They would generally probably be smaller. There are different organizations that do other workforce and affordable housing options in the county. So while Dean's program is one that we learned a little bit about tonight, there are others, and this model might fit others a little more. There we see Mercy Housing and Whatcom Housing Association and others build multifamily kind of developments. And again, as I mentioned, we would retain some of this property. And if you can see my cursor, this area here presumably would be approximately what we would retain for the police department annex, which would allow us to add on roughly about the same square footage or a little less than the square footage of the existing police station. Or we could, you know, not do this at all, then we'd have that land available for another use. And that is, those are the two properties. Before I leave this slide, did anyone have questions on this property?
The green square, the green rectangle there is just the part you were talking about the city making available for this.
Yeah,
this
it's about 10,000 square feet.
Mike, would any of that other property behind there, let's say if a developer came in and wanted to buy where the library is, where the police department is, where this is, and say they want to put a hotel or something to that magnitude, a city, a place for the pub, a new library, a new police station. But the thing I know the police department needs is a new building. And this what they got, I know it's really inadequate, but I honestly believe right now that there's so much, so many people looking at this town. I think we could get a developer to come in and take up this property and do a use for the city, whether it's housing, but use the whole, because it seems to these guys, to me, is a lot of these projects aren't big enough. They need a bigger project. That's a few of the guys I've talked to, and there's some that would probably jump all over this, but man, I think that's a pretty, I'm not trying to stall us. I think it should sell, and it should sell to someone that can enhance the city. It's sitting right in the middle of the city, and we put a thing in there where we can build a new police department or a rec center with all of it included. I think we got to look a little farther out than pick and piece together, which we've done for years, but man, we got a lot of stuff going on here.
Okay.
Yeah, just one comment. That the police department does not have to be in that location. It could be further outside the downtown area, just like Ferndale and whatever. So we don't have to think in terms of necessarily accommodating the police department if something were to come along that would take up more space than that green rectangle.
But we need to make an executive decision on that fairly quickly, because my understanding is the part there that Michael didn't include in the green rectangle is the, in theory, where the police extension building that would have their evidence facility and workout room and some of these other things. In theory, that's where we're citing that. So those kinds of things might come into motion fairly soon. So if we wanted to make a big change on where the police station is, we'd have to make that kind of executive decision fairly soon, I would think, in the order of things. Is that correct, Michael?
Yes, you certainly would. As recently as just several months ago, the city council told me that the police station is staying there for the foreseeable future. And with this expansion, allowing us at least 10 years of use of that building before we need to upsize, that building a new police department somewhere else was not on the table. If that's changing, I need to know, because we need to purchase property and start planning a new police department somewhere else soon.
Well, Michael, I think that's a much bigger discussion than should we put in a dozen affordable housing units. Yep. Because we started that discussion we started the police discussion years ago, and one of the reasons we tabled it is because of COVID, which we're still in the middle of. Also, we have a border that's not open. So money-wise, it's a huge, huge thing. So we're not going to be able to finish that in the next 10 minutes that we have.
No.
What I do want to say is that I'm in favor of anything we can do that will prompt home ownership in the city. And by home ownership, I don't necessarily mean single family. You know, it could be townhouses, it could be condominiums, anything like that. I'm open to looking at the different programs. This first program sounds great, but if there's a half a dozen or a dozen programs out there that can do something for the people who want to live in Blaine, I think we should look at all of them. Also, what is the thought? Because I know our zoning has not been looked at in a long time. What is the thought of, for like example, for new developments instead of four houses per acre, we go five or six houses per acre, and kind of push the amount of land that everybody gets smaller, maybe even the amount, the houses a little smaller. So now instead of selling an 1800 square foot house for $450,000, you're selling a 1200 square foot house for $350,000. I mean, I'm just kind of picking numbers. Is that it? And that might be a question for the Stacys. So.
Okay, if Michael, unless you have a big response for that, Ryan had his hand up patiently for a while here.
Yeah, my response is just that is a really good question for the Stacys. Yes, you can require greater density, would be the short answer. Mr. Lopez?
I just had a quick question in regards to the Old City Hall property. Is it an all or nothing for this property? Can you allocate maybe half of the apartments to affordable housing, the other half to market rate, or does it have to be all affordable housing or no affordable housing?
It doesn't have to be all or nothing. There are models that are done differently, but you'd have to find someone who wanted to do something that was a mix. Because, okay, you know, again, we wouldn't be developing it, we wouldn't be running it, but yes, there are definitely buildings and programs and projects that are done that way.
But this work session was to look at the particular model for affordable housing. And in relation to that, Michael had identified two city-owned properties that could fit into that model. And that's what we're looking at today.
Yep.
Michael, did you have any more of your presentation?
No, just basically wanted to mention this last little bit that we would, this is a multi-step process. We would need to do some policy amendments. We'd need to surplus the property. We would consider an EDI application, perhaps, with the appropriate developer. And then there would ultimately be a negotiated contract or transition agreement, potentially even a sale, that would require the permanent affordability. So what I'm going to do is ask council, you have about 5 minutes left, if folks could tell me whether they would like to know more, I would say, particularly about the surplusing the water tower property, so that I could bring that forward as a decision point. That would be really helpful. The downtown property, I'd like us to wait until we at least demo that and can have a refreshed conversation about the police station and police department, because enough items came up today that make me think that we need to clarify what's been done in the past so that everyone's up to speed, and confirm that the city does or does not want to continue down the path of keeping the police department right there.
We might be looking at a work session just to discuss the future of the police station and to bring the newer council members up to date on the background on that.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah. But so if folks could give me some sort of a sense of your opinions on looking at surplusing the water tower property, I could start getting more information to you on that.
You got my vote on that one.
What's the sense to the council here? Eric, do you like the idea of housing around in the water tower surplus property?
I mean, I don't mind looking at options for it. That's fine. You know, it's a matter of, does his staff have the time to look at all that? And is it, you know, because it seems like it's pretty far out there right now, and we're not going to be putting a nail in a piece of wood anytime soon. But if So I guess I'm kind of indifferent to positive.
Yeah, I mean, we draw the lines and pick the zoning long in advance of most things. You know, that's what our job to do here. Is there any big objections on the water tower adjacent property being potential housing? Short of that, I think, Michael, you've got a sense of counsel here.
Yeah, I do. That's very helpful. Thank you. And one of the things related to Mr. Davidson's comment there is, you're right, we are a long ways away. It takes about 3 to 5 years for an affordable or workforce housing program like this to go from start to finish. So if we are interested in it, you have to start at some point. It might be 3 years before people are swinging hammers.
And it also helps the future developers see that we're moving that infrastructure out their way, which helps their cost also, correct?
It does. It will be very attractive to the developers out in that area to see that the city is able to offset some of the cost with other tools in our
quick question. Could they do the infrastructure stuff with the planned development coming? Let's say if east of that, it gets going before they can start building homes, could they put in the infrastructure? You know, would that hold up if somebody else bought that? Or I know East Maple Ridge or the Martin property now, could they put in the infrastructure?
Yes.
To hook to the Martin property before, I mean, I'm sure you got to get it all passed. This is what it's going to be, but let's say, does that take 3 to 5 years to be able to put the infrastructure in there?
No. When you say they, though, Mike, who is they?
City, us. What's that?
Well, we're not building the infrastructure. So I guess I...
So it'd be the land trust people?
For this development?
Yes.
Yeah, if we were going to do this development, it would be the developer, which potentially would be the land trust, who would put the infrastructure in. That would be the first thing that you do before you start building homes. So that wouldn't take as long. I guess I'm not really entirely clear what you're asking.
We'll chat. We got to move on.
Okay.
And Michael, you also, I hope you're also made in your notes from today, what Councilmember Higgins brought up, just reminding me of what happened with Woodbury over in Semiyamu, where the landscaping buffers was of interest to people who had purposely situated themselves with a certain expectation. So we should bear in mind when we're looking at the water tower adjacent property, whether or not there's an impacted neighbor or two that is enjoying their ruralness, we can just make sure that the planning department takes a look at what level of buffering would be appropriate.
Yes, and I see Stacy taking notes. And one of the things that I would say is that the zoning already stipulates what the city council has deemed is necessary and appropriate. And
we may wish to, at any time, it's a living document. We may wish to, now that we're looking at it, Councilmember Higgins' point might make us go, do we need to deal with that in any way now, like we should have with Semiyamu? So we weren't at the point with the torches and pitchforks and everyone saying, why isn't there more of a buffer? I'm saying, let's have some of that advanced forward thinking now when it doesn't matter yet.
We can certainly do that.
And unless there's any other business in this work session, should we take a 2 minute stretch our legs break before the, yes.
2 minute.
2 minutes stretch your legs break and the mayor will take it from there.
Thank you, Dean.
Thanks everyone, appreciate it.
Thanks for coming, Dean. Good seeing you.
Good evening.